The Fan on Demand.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to Primetime Sports for Tuesday, August 19th. I am Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McCowan, joined by the gentleman to my immediate left, the one and only Ken Reed of Sportsnet.
Sorry I'm late.
I thought I was the only guy who still, like, wrote down stuff on day planners. Because I don't trust this electronic.
I don't either. Well, it's a Bob thing, because I figured part of being on this show is coming in at 3:58, which basically I got here at. I am booked for 4 to 5 this week, but I insisted it was 5 to 7, but I looked at my day planner, and apparently I looked at the wrong week, and I got a new phone because I had to have my afternoon nap, because you know I work late.
The dog ate your homework.
And my alarm didn't go off because it's a new phone, and I don't know how to work it. And basically, that's...
So what you're telling us is...
I'm an idiot.
No, what you're telling us is you went out golfing and you stayed too long in the bar after your round was over.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure, yeah. A couple of morning pops after today's round. Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, so here I am.
Well, I'm glad you're here. We've got a crap load of stuff to talk about.
It's a busy August day, isn't it?
Yeah, this is supposed to be the down period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and not only is it busy today, but it was busy after the only pro team playing in the city. Well, I guess he'd call the Argos pro. Only big league team playing in the city had the day off. So you would think this would be like a real down day with the Jays not having played last night. But I mean, all hell's broken loose. Our Michael Grange reporting that there was a settlement in the Bertuzzi Moore court case that's maybe kind of hung up a little bit right now, but both sides seem to be saying there's a settlement. And then if that isn't enough, and boy, is he going to be in trouble when he rolls in at 5 o'clock. Elliot Friedman goes on Twitter and says that Tim Lewicki is leaving as president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, that he is gone. And Elliot and then followed up that, you know, Lewicki, by the way, is denying this, which of course he is. He's denying up and down that he's leaving, which of course means that in fact he is leaving.
You have to deny, don't you?
Yes. And, you know, he's saying he's worried about the seasons at hand. Well,
why do you have to deny?
What season? TFC season, which ends in a couple of months. Here's what's going to happen. And we'll talk to Elliot about this, but I have absolutely no doubt that Tim Lewicki won't be head of MLSE. I'm going to say by February or March, he's gone.
So this is going to be a long, drawn-out thing.
Not really. I think that the process has started. And I know today I fired off some emails to a couple of guys in the States, sports banker guys that I've spoken to in the past that I've used, guys who know Lewicki. They all said, yeah, I mean, people are talking about it within the industry. So, you know, whatever he says. And plus the fact that it's Elliot Friedman's got a pretty good track
record
of breaking stuff. So I'm saying Tim Lewicki's gone, and, you know, after Christmas, before Christmas, in the spring, I think it's a done deal.
It's a short 2 years for Lewicki, but, I mean, the guy basically did what he said he was going to do, did he not? I mean, he kind of...
If you operate under the assumption that the Leafs are stronger now than they were 2 years ago...
Did he fix TFC?
I mean, they'll get in the playoffs.
Okay, well, so then we'll put a check by that.
Well, there are still nights where they're capable of being really bad.
I think the Raptors surprised
the everybody. Raptors, I think we can safely say that... you know, if
they're in good hands,
to me, his whatever happens from this point on, his legacy in Toronto is that he's a guy that helped run Brian Colangelo out of town, which makes him a good guy in my books.
And I think, depending on what the Leafs do in the next even 5 to 10 years, then I think you can probably judge Lewicki then, because you have to give Shanahan some time.
Perhaps
I don't like judging someone the day they leave,
living. You have to judge them.
It's what we do for a living, but come on, let's be realistic here. If you can't judge Lewicki just based on the results we've seen so far, those results will take time. Now, if they're horrible in 5 years, then you can totally judge them. But
patience is boring.
Yeah, you're totally disagreeing with me.
Patience is boring.
Yeah.
No, look, it's been. I'll. You know what? One thing he has done. one thing he has done is he's managed to get the Leafs, he's managed to get them at least giving the impression of being a far-sighted organization instead of an organization that was always looking back to 67. And he's done that. And at the same time, he's initiated this process we've now seen in Toronto where they're going to have that the monument to great Leafs teams, which I think is terrific. The perfect idea is, you know, having the Leafs bench and then having different Leafs stars from various eras sitting on the bench. And that to me is a perfect monument to a team that says all you have to say about a team, about an organization. So I'll give him credit in that way. I think finally, when it comes to the Leafs off ice, I think the Leafs are this close to finally being comfortable with their past and finally getting their priorities in place, finally getting or striking, I should say, the right balance between past and present. And I say that is 100% on Tim Lewicki.
The word is balance. And you just said it because when he initially said, oh, we're going to take down all those pitchers. And when guys walk out, whoa, that rocked this place. Like that rocked Toronto. People
and
were
you know what?
Totally
it was,
caught off guard. I think it was the right move because you have to move on from 1967. That's a long time ago. You have to move on from that.
Yes.
But at the same time, you have to remember the past.
It was necessary to have somebody come in and say, will you people finally turn the freaking page?
Yeah,
and
please.
The only guy that can do that is a guy who wasn't born in this city, wasn't part of Leafs Nation.
Yeah, not a Leafs fan.
Exactly. Never grew up dying to run the Leafs. You had to have a guy like Tim Lewicki. Never mind, you also had to have a guy who has a strong enough personality to deal with an ownership group that's composed of Rogers and Bell.
Warring factions.
Well, I mean, I don't know about warring factions, but certainly...
Rivals. Yeah.
So anyhow, we'll see where that goes.
So
Elliot will join us at 5.
I guess the million-dollar question is, why is he leaving? Is it not?
Well,
it's not what his legacy is. Like, what's his next gig?
Yeah, I would think he's probably got a better job out there someplace or a job that he has had his eyes on for a while. I mean, all the stuff about, you know, whether or not he has a no-compete clause. I mean, people in the States are certainly under the impression that he has a non-compete clause.
Mm-hmm.
That's like anything else. I mean, if you read Tim's answer to the questions that were put to him today, they're pretty interesting. They're not. There is not a blanket denial,
right?
In it,
right.
There's a lot of focused on the seasons at hand. Okay,
so
the TFC season. What the fall?
I don't. Well,
summer.
First
fall?
Off, I don't.
What season?
I don't understand soccer seasons how they work anyway because they never stop playing.
Well,
no, they
don't.
They're in 14 different leagues. I don't understand
right.
it. Everybody gets a ribbon.
I don't understand. That's what happens when you know when you're athletes and you play continually. As opposed to just competing in 27 shifts.
As opposed to walking for 90 minutes.
They don't walk for 90
minutes. I golfed this morning. It was harder.
No, it wasn't.
18 holes up and down walking.
No, it wasn't. Please.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't. Did you carry your clubs?
I had a cart.
Oh, that's so hard.
I did.
Oh, it's starting that cart. My God.
I did.
How do you manage?
I had an awkward event on the 12th hole.
See, I'm winning the argument, so you're going to change.
Where I injured my ankle and rolled around on the green for 14 and a half minutes till magic water spray was applied to me. Then I was okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm. 14 and a half minutes.
Mm-hmm. I was substituted off after 16 holes. I'd had enough. I'd cramped up.
See, there's no point in.
I'm so trying to get you going right now.
Well, you can't. I've got to pace myself. I've got a long night ahead. I've got to pace myself.
That's right. Your TV.
I've got to
save
my anger and
that's
all
right.
this stuff.
You got to be happy on TV. You can't be angry on TV.
I'm not angry. I'm happy today. I'm happy today. Why? Do I look unhappy? I'm a happy man.
I think you're a pretty happy guy today.
Big guy's going to leave the city. That's awesome. Yeah, you know, not awesome that he's leaving, but it's gonna be great to talk about for the next months until he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the Jays playing. Now we got Jeff Passan coming on to talk baseball. We're gonna talk about Johnny Football, who I think he became my all time favorite athlete yesterday.
When he flipped the bird?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
This is a league that here's the NFL. It's okay to beat the hell out of your wife.
But you can't
flip
the bird.
But don't flip the bird to the Washington Redskins.
And flip the bird for about a tenth of a second.
It's okay to carry a firearm and drive drunk, but don't flip the bird to the Washington Redskins. Anyhow, yeah. Don't get me started about the NFL.
We'll get you going on it later.
It's just a reprehensible league run by evil people and played by evil people.
Continues to make money, though, at quite an impressive rate.
Buck Martinez joins us. I'm going to turn the page. The Blue Jays are in Milwaukee tonight for the first of two games against a team that nobody really talks about. Nope. Nobody seems to want to give them a lot of credit. Maybe it's because they play in Milwaukee. I don't know, but they play in the division that, for my money, is the toughest old school division in baseball. And they've been in first place since April 5th.
They're 70-55.
They've got 36 wins on the road. That's like the third most in baseball. Buck Martinez joins us from Miller Park. How you doing, Buck?
I'm well. I'm doing very well. I'm sitting in Milwaukee watching the Brewers kind of get ready to their day. They're running around, and you're right. This is a pretty good team. They just swept the Dodgers in L.A. three straight, and they beat Greinke and Kershaw. So you can't take them lightly, that's for sure.
You know, Buck, we had Dave Nelson and on Baseball Central today. We talked to Doug Melvin as well yesterday. And I asked them about Ron Renicky because, again, much like the Brewers, I don't think a lot of people, if you ask people to name the five best managers in baseball, I mean, there will be a few people who would put Ron in that list. For my money, he's the manager of the year in the National League. I don't know how you feel about it.
He's done a heck of a job, and I had the good fortune of playing golf with him yesterday morning, and we spent 5 hours together and had a good conversation with him about his team, about his philosophy, and what they've done here in Milwaukee. And you're right, he gets overlooked and certainly doesn't get the recognition he deserves. But, you know, they're doing a great job here, and they're in a tough division. They have a lot of respect for the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Reds, and they know that they've got their work cut out for them down the stretch.
So, Buck, how do they end up at 70-55 at this point in the season? What does Milwaukee do so well?
They pitch well. They pitch well, and they play pretty good defense, and they've got a terrific catcher. Jonathan Lucroy is a guy that gets the most out of his pitchers. They'd like to see him improve his game calling a little bit, but he's a bulldog behind the plate. He's always thinking about how he can help his team win. He's the best offensive catcher in the league. He's hitting just under Kurt Suzuki for the best average by a catcher in baseball, and he's an extra base guy. He's tied with Miguel Cabrera with 40 doubles. Not many people would recognize that.
Buck Martinez joins us on Primetime Sports. You know, one of the things that I admire about Ron Renicky is the Brewers, and Buck, it seems to be in their DNA, and it might even go back years, but they seem to be one of those bend but don't break teams. You know, this is a team that, I mean, they had Prince Fielder. Prince Fielder's gone. They had their other cornerstone player, Ryan Braun, suspended. He comes back. It's a relatively small market. I think a lot of people were wondering whether or not Ryan Braun would be able to get his career going again in the Milwaukee fishbowl. And not only does he appear to have done that, but it appears as if that clubhouse has really kind of helped him in the process. Like, there's something about the DNA of that organization, and I don't know what it is, but from a distance, it's pretty easy to admire them.
Yeah, it sure is. Ramos Ramirez has a lot to do with that. He's a very quiet leader and goes about his business in a professional manner. And then you look at, Braun is a good player and he's had his problems, but I go back to Lucroy, who is a guy that, you know, really stabilizes the whole personality of this team. And, you know, Renicky is an understated guy, but he's a no-nonsense guy at the same time. He expects them to perform. Expects them to come out and play every day. You know, they've got a good shortstop in Segura, and they've got some of the younger players that are starting to develop. And Scooter Jeanette's another good example of that. And the center fielder is as talented as anybody in baseball. And sometimes he does some things to make you scratch your head, but at the same time, he can beat you in many different ways.
So what do the Blue Jays worry about over the next couple of nights? Do they worry about the Milwaukee Brewers, or do they worry about themselves? Because this team, I think it's 4-11 and 11. Yeah, 4-11 in August.
They're not scoring any runs. They've hit 7 home runs. That's the fewest in the majors in the month of August, while Baltimore's at 28. and that's a pretty lopsided figure. They're not scoring any runs. They're 30th in the major leagues in runs scored in August. They better worry about generating some offense because they haven't been able to do that. And, you know, I know that Double E is back and Linda's back and all of that, but you know what? Everybody has to kind of contribute and dig in and figure out how to score runs. They've only scored 6 runs this month, twice in a game. Mm-hmm. And you know, that has been their calling card, being able to score runs, and they haven't been able to do that lately.
Why haven't they figured out how to score runs away from the home run? Because the home run was so friendly to them in May. We saw they just cruised through May, but they seem so reliant on the home run for any offense.
Yeah, and you know what the problem is, Jeff, and this is something that we knew was going to catch up, but when you don't have your regular players, the extra players can only carry it for so long. They're extra players for a reason, and they're part-time players for a reason. But when you ask them to be everyday players, it's going to catch up to them. And you have to look at Francisco, and you have to look at Valencia and Reinwald, and they've done a nice job in spot starts and here and there. But over the long haul, when you have to lean on them as everyday players, it's going to catch up to them physically. And Kawasaki's another guy. You know, everybody raves about what he's done, but the reality is he's an extra man that's played way too much.
The Jays and Brewers will play tonight. First pitch goes at 8:10 p.m. Jay Happbuck, he's got the club has an option on him for $6.7 million. If we'd had this discussion, I don't know, 2 months ago, maybe 2.5 months ago, if I asked you, would you exercise that option, we might have gone back and forth on it a bit. There's no doubt now, is there?
No. At that price, he certainly is. You're not going to replace him at that price. Obviously, free agency is going to cost you a lot more than that, and you're not going to be able to woo just any free agent you want by throwing money at them. We've seen that in the past. Toronto's not in the spot where you can just go out and throw money at a free agent. You have to prove that you're going to be a contending ball club for a while. But I think, yeah, Jay Happ is a bargain at 6.7. I expect them to pick up the option on him, and I think he is worth it. He has been reliable. He's been consistent, and you know, as a number 5 starter, I think he's probably better than most.
Buck, at what point did he turn the corner this season?
I think he turned the corner. He turned the corner when his leg got healthy. You remember when he got hit in the head last May and he collapsed? Everybody was concerned about his skull fracture, but the reality was he hurt his knee, and that was his landing leg, and he couldn't really extend over that leg. And once he got to the point where he could trust that knee again, then he could cut it loose. And he made a slight adjustment with his arm angle. He dropped it a little bit away from his head, and that freed up his arm so he could really drive through his delivery. We've seen his velocity as high as 95, 96 at times this year. And now he trusts his fastball. He's using it. He understands he doesn't have to be ultra-perfect with it and really fine in his delivery. And now he's pitching with a lot of confidence.
Buck, you know, you caught and you managed, and I looked at Jay Happ, and I went back and looked at some of his numbers, and this is a guy who has gone or had gone from being a guy capable of striking out guys. He came up to the majors. I don't think anybody thought he had strikeout stuff, but it appears as if he was one of those pitchers, Buck, that really kind of took it to heart when people started saying, hey, you know what? Don't try to strike everybody out. Try to get the ground ball out. Well, that's fine, but it appears as if at times he maybe became a little too reliant on trying to pitch down in the zone and seemed to lose his ability to, you know, to throw that high fastball by guys. And now we're seeing him do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did that 2 starts ago, of course, when he struck out 12.
Right.
I think he understands now that no matter what you do, unless you go strike one, you're going to have problems.
Right.
He doesn't have terrific secondary and third pitches. He has to have the ability to throw strikes with his fastball, elevate when he wants to, and get a lot of quick outs. And I think the quicker he does that, the better he's going to be. And you're right. His location down has been good, but then the surprise element, that fastball upstairs, will lead to the strikeouts.
Buck, the day off yesterday, it seemed that 19-inning game just kind of wiped out the Seattle series. Is this team back to, I mean, is the bullpen okay now? Are they well-rested heading into this series? Or are they kind of still feeling the ill effects of a couple, you know, they had to fill in for a couple rough starts? Or are they okay right now?
They should be okay, Jeff. I think, you know, having Hutch go 7 innings really was a break for John Gibbons and showed a lot about Drew's character. He gave up 6 in the first and just really kind of cinched up his belt and said, that's all you're going to get. And, you know, had Reyes made a play in the field, it would have been a one-run game, and they would have a chance to come back late in the game. But I think the bullpen's okay. You know, you got to suck it up now. Everybody's a little bit tired, but you can't use that as an excuse. And I think the 4-11 record is something they have to look at in the mirror and say, we got to make a better effort here, whatever it takes. I mean, everybody's banged up. Everybody's tired. It's August, and you got to figure out a way to win games.
The Jays have three. I didn't even realize this. They've got four more off days: the 21st, 28th, yeah, and then September 1st and September 11th. I'm looking around. It seems like everybody else has. Well, there are a couple of teams that have that many. There are a couple of teams that have three.
They got about three, four games in hand on everybody right now.
Well, yeah, and they're
they should do.
Is that a good thing?
Have the off days. Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, I think they need to, collect themselves, refocus here against Milwaukee, win these two games, and then, the Tampa Bay Rays are right on their heels. They're two games back in the loss column, and they're playing great baseball right now, and the Blue Jays have never played well against Tampa Bay, so they're going to have a tough series over the weekend, so they can't look beyond this two-game series. Milwaukee is fighting to stay atop the National League Central, and you know, the Blue Jays swept them in Rogers Center, so I'm sure that the Brewers want a little bit of payback here in Milwaukee.
Buck, last question. We just showed the Chi Sox uniforms from the other day, the 1980s throwbacks. Good or bad? You like those unis?
I do. I like them. I like them a lot. I think it reflects a great time, and I really like the Reds pinstripe uniform they wore before that. The Dick Allen red pinstripe for me was the best one they ever had.
Oh, that was, with the Sox on the hat.
Yep.
It was tremendous.
Sox on the hat. They had powder blue road uniforms with red numerals.
Oh,
they were spectacular.
Nice.
They were tremendous.
See, I like those Ron Kittle 80s ones. I like those ones.
They reminded me of softball uniforms.
Yeah.
Buck, thanks so much for doing this. Look forward to your work tonight.
All right, fellas. You have a great day.
Take care. That is Buck Martinez.
They did look like softball unis. Do you remember the 70s shorts?
Do you remember the shorts?
Yes. Yeah. Did you like those? I didn't.
No, I did not like the shorts. I did not like the White Sox shorts. But the I saw the throwback unis they wore on Sunday.
I love those ones. I really like them.
Yeah, I'm with Buck. I remember when Wilbur Wood and Dick Allen, and they had the white pinstripe.
Yeah.
And I mean, God, they were just. And that was back in the day where guys wore the socks high, too.
Greg Luzinski looked pretty good in that. Extra tight, you know? Greg just swinging for the fences every time.
Wilbur Wood was another guy who was.
That's Greg Luzinski's swing.
What, you got a hairball or what?
No, that's Greg Luzinski's swing. He didn't try to slap a single the other way.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
We're going to be joined, by the way, at 5:15 by Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. And he's got an item up on their website right now, and that's the reason I want to bring this up right now before while we have you here. He has broken down the schedules for the 19 Major League Baseball playoff contenders in terms of opponents' winning percentage. And this might make you feel a little better if you're a Blue Jays fan. The Yankees' opponents have a .509 winning percentage. The Rays' opponents have a .512 winning percentage. The Reds, .516. The Marlins, .500. The Angels, .494. Your Blue Jays, .501. Seattle, .495. Everybody's pretty close here. The big difference is those off days for the Blue Jays. And, as Jeff Passan points out, the fact that the Blue Jays have more than 60% of their games at home.
Do you want the off days? Because, I mean, you got the games in hand that they haven't won. That's the problem, right?
At this stage, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want the off days if I'm leading the division.
Yeah, if you're cooking, yeah.
But right now, I would take an off day every other day.
I would take about a Blue Jays week off right now.
Anything that will allow me to baby Drew Hutchison or Marcus Stroman's workload, even just a little bit, I would be okay with that.
It's just been such a bad August. On August 1st, they woke up and they were three games up on Seattle for the wild card lead, and now it's a seven game swing almost. What's gone on in 18-19 days? It's just it's crazy what's happened.
Well, you know, when the Major League schedule came out at the start of the year, and you sat down and looked at the schedule, and you saw all these games at home against Tampa, Boston, and New York. You looked at those games, and the first thing I thought of was, okay, that will be the make-or-break point of the Jays season.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that games in Seattle and against the Chicago White Sox would end up probably playing a more significant role in what happens to this team than these games coming up. Because, you know, you can sweep those teams in the East, and it doesn't matter worth a damn if Seattle and Baltimore keep winning.
Here's one for you. And, of course, the immediate answer is no, because you play to win every game. If you could go back in time, go back a week or so, would that 19-inning game, would you have just been better off just losing it in the 10th?
Nah, you can never do that.
See?
You can never
but
do
you,
that.
But you can never do it, but looking back,
you know why
I think those 19 innings took a huge toll.
Yeah,
huge
you know, toll. But the only thing I would say about that is I would agree if the pitching came out of that and just stunk, but they've lost because they haven't been able to hit.
Oh, they haven't been, but also they got a couple starts out of that game where the starter went, you know, Stroman went two-thirds of an inning, and
he wouldn't have been taxed
bullpen that's got to go back out there.
I'd be if the pitching was really was that god awful, then I would say that. But no, I think you take the win, and I'm with Buck. You know, you look at this team's offensive numbers for the month of August, fewest runs, fewest homers in the majors. Kevin Barker, taking a look at the batting average with runners in scoring position at two out, the lowest in the majors, and I mean it's under 200. It's a team that has had a lot of trouble offensively, and even when they were winning, even when they were going on that roll in May, the one thing everybody was saying is that as good as this lineup is, as good as it should be, there were still some issues at second base, and you know, the outfield as well, although that was certainly resolved a little bit at least by the combination of Ghost and Pilar and to a certain degree Rasmus as well. But this team just doesn't score enough runs.
No, they simply don't. And in May, they were scoring runs. Remember, we used to have a debate, a healthy debate. What do you do when Colby comes back? Who do you send down, Ghost or Pilar? And nobody knew the answer.
No. No,
it's kind of sorted itself out.
And you know, the story that really doesn't get talked about a lot here, but I know if you talk to John Gibbons, he'll bring it up right away. I don't know what type of player Brett Laurie's going to be. I have no idea. He could be a third baseman who's going to hit for a lot of power and have a average. He could be a third baseman who's going to be, you know, have a nice balance of power average. Could be a third baseman is going to be more a batting average guy than a power guy, or it could be a second baseman. I don't know what type of player is going to be, but I know this. He is missed in this lineup. And the start of the year, one of the things John Gibbons told a bunch of us, a bunch of reporters, just standing around talking, he said, one concern I have about this team, he said, we got some dead-ass guys. And by that, he meant low-energy guys. Mm-hmm. Not that they were, you know, rockheads. But he said, we've got to, you look around, we got some low-energy guys. There's not a lot of, you know, real high-intensity individuals. And I mean, I know for a fact, if you talk to him, he'll tell you, they miss Laurie there. I mean, yeah, his act wears thin at times, but he's been a noticeable absence.
It's nice when you're winning. It's not, his act is great when you're winning. It's
infectious. Well, you can have, exactly. Right? Or even if it rubs you the wrong way, at least the caveat is always, well, he's acting like a jackass, but at least they're winning.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. His glove at third is just desperately missed.
Yeah.
If you talk about where you want to put him long-term, I think long-term he's much more valuable as a second baseman if you can bring in a good third baseman.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put him at second, that's just an amazing range.
No, I agree totally. I think, you know, we'll have that debate when Brett Laurie comes back.
When we can, yeah.
But I'm absolutely convinced that Brett Laurie's future with this organization long-term is as a second baseman. So we told you that a lot happened today. The Moore Bertuzzi stuff, Tim Lewicki's, you know, is he going to be here? Is he not going to be here? The New York Islanders, I was going to say they've been sold, but here's what has happened. John Ledecky and Scott Malkin. Scott Malkin's a London-based investor. John Ledecky is a former co-owner of the Washington Capitals. They have agreed to purchase a substantial minority share of the New York Islanders from Charles Wong. Wong will remain as the team's representative on the Board of Governors for 2 years, which is odd, which seems to suggest that essentially what is going to happen is that Ledecky and Malkin will join the ownership group and eventually buy out Charles Wong, the New York Islanders owner. This is interesting for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that at one point a couple of years ago, John Ledecky tried to buy the Washington Nationals. And his money man was George Soros, who's a financier with a distinctly left-wing view of the world and a distinctly left-wing view of business.
Can you be a financier with a left-wing view of the business?
Yeah, but he's not the type of guy you're going to invite to your private men's club to have a cigar and a brandy. John Ledecky's an interesting guy. There's no indication that there's Soros money involved here. But it certainly makes this whole process, this whole acquisition, a little more interesting than just the run-of-the-mill, he's buying a hockey team. Eric Fisher of the Sports Business Journal has known Ledecky for years. He covered his attempt to buy the Washington Nationals. He knows the people who know John Ledecky. I think this is a very interesting ownership story. To me, this goes beyond the usual NHL ownership story. And Eric Fisher of Sports Business Journal will join us when Primetime Sports continues on the Fan Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown. Elliot Friedman, who blew up Twitter this afternoon and created an inordinate amount of work for those of us in the media industry.
He saved your day.
Well, more or less. He'll slide in at 5 o'clock and be my co-host for the final 2 hours of Primetime Sports. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports will join us. Phil Savage, former GM of the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk about Johnny Manziel. I love Johnny Manziel. He's my new favorite athlete. Brunt! Stephen Brunt's going to join us. We'll find out about his bear.
Please do.
And we'll talk to Brunt about reports that Tim Lewicki will be stepping down as president and CEO of MLSE. That's the report that Elliot Friedman had this morning, or this, late this morning on Twitter that kind of got us all worked up in a knot. And Greg Wyshynski from Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog, and a co-conspirator on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, he'll join us at 6:15. Wouldn't you know it, your Maple Leafs have hired not one numbers nerd, not two numbers nerds, not three numbers nerds.
Another one?
They've added, according to reports, three more numbers guys. Three more analytics guys.
Hey, this was all predicted in the 1984 film.
Hockey columnists in Toronto are jumping off the bridge. Now they're going to
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Going to have to learn about.
Speaking of nerds, see you, Sid. Yeah, I mean.
Hey, did Sid give you the Manziel salute?
No, he gave me the horns.
He gave you the horns.
Yeah.
All right.
You still got to play the game on the ice. That's what I like about it. I don't care how movies are made. I just like the
movie. Got to give it 110%.
Here we go now, boys. Pucks in deep. Quick start.
All right. So you heard our banter before the break about the Islanders and Charles Wong selling a minority stake in the team to Scott Malkin and Jonathan Ledecky. And the idea is that Ledecky and Malkin would buy out the or would transition to the role of majority owners in 2 years. And in other words, that Charles Wong will be remain the majority owner and represent the team on the NHL Board of Governors until then. Interesting timing for a variety of reasons. One, a guy named Andrew Barraway is absolutely convinced that he had a deal to buy the team for $420
million. $425 for the Islanders.
Exactly. He's absolutely convinced he had a deal to do that. But secondly, the Islanders will move into the Barclays Center in Brooklyn the season after this. So kind of an interesting time to be buying the New York Islanders. Eric Fisher of Sports Business Journal joins us on Primetime Sports. Eric, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Good afternoon.
A couple things. First of all, tell me a little bit about John Ledecky, because I went back and did some reading and some of your reporting when he was looking into buying the Washington Nationals, and the name George Soros kept coming up. And he doesn't strike me as the type of guy a lot of professional owners would really like to be involved with. Now, there's no indication he's involved here. But tell me a little bit about Ledecky. This is a guy who is a minority, former owner of the Washington Capitals, but he's been interested in getting a majority stake in a franchise for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah, I've known John for over 15 years. You know, he was a D.C.-based businessman, sort of rolling up a bunch of startup companies and sort of flipping the end product as sort of a constant wheeler dealer and self-made millionaire and so forth, and was part of the original Leonsis crew that came in 1999 that bought the Capitals and a minority share of the Capitals and the building, or the Wizards and the building. He only was part of that group for a few years. He didn't hang around with Ted for too long, although he was part of the effort to get Michael Jordan in there for a couple years when he was there. But soon after the Jordan thing, he left as well and continued to do his own thing in the business world. And, you know, spends a lot of time up here in New York as well, and sort of back and forth, and sort of has bases of operations in both places. And when the Nationals, when the Expos came down and became the Nationals and baseball was selling them, he did make a run at them and have a bid group, and was backed by billionaire financier George Soros. The thing with George Soros at the time was that he was sort of a lightning rod on two fronts. That at that time there in the mid-2000s, this was the Bush era, and both sides of Congress were Republican, so it was a very red time, so to speak, and he's obviously a very strident Democrat fundraiser and very anti-Bush, so was sort of, you know, natural conflict there. And he was also very big on the drug legalization front, which, you know, given where things were with the Congress and the whole steroid front with baseball back in 2004, 2005, there was also some sort of natural conflict there. So the Ledecky-Soros bid for the Nationals never went anywhere, of course, and obviously Ted Lerner and his family owned the team. And, you know, since then, Ledecky's, you know, continued to do his thing and very active in philanthropic efforts. He's very tight with Jerry Reinsdorf and, you know, sort of been just kind of doing his thing and, you know, looking for the next opportunity. And obviously one has come here together with the Islanders.
He just wrote down, Jeff, the name that just popped into my mind when I heard there. Go ahead.
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yeah.
You know, how would you describe him? I mean, clearly, obviously, he's a smart guy. He's made a lot of money. Because I find this interesting, just because I find we quite often don't necessarily know all that well the kind of the politics of ownership. Is there anything to suggest that this guy is, you know, a bleeding heart liberal, basically? Because he may not fit in the NHL.
Well, but again, he's sort of navigated Washington business, and
right,
you sort of have to be ecumenical politically to a certain extent to be able to be really successful. You know, he's a high-energy guy, and I think he's going to be certainly a lot more visible than Charles Wong was. I mean, we had Charles Wong in one of our conferences last year, but he's just not been out there a lot at all. And you know, John was always talking, you know, on behalf of his companies, on behalf of the Capitals, when he was involved with Leonsis. I mean, he's got no bashfulness of putting himself out there. So, you know, I think it's going to be more of a visible era for the Islanders that's taking shape now.
Eric, two-part question that I'm sure a lot of listeners are wondering right now. Why would anybody want to buy the Islanders, and are the remaining Islanders fans jumping in the streets right now thinking that Wong may finally be on his way out, or was Wong, was he valued by a certain segment of Islanders fans?
No, I'll take the second one first there, that I think this is, you know, a good thing, that I think the Wong era was one of sort of unrealized promise, that, you know, there was a lot of hope that they would sort of get to some next level, get their own building out on the island, you know, with that lighthouse project. You know, there are a lot of sort of hopes and dreams, and I think he's a nice guy, but I just, it seems to me that that whole era is going to be one of sort of unfulfilled potential of what could have been. Mm-hmm. And now you're looking at a situation where you're getting into a beautiful new building. It may not be ideally suited for hockey, but so much better in every other facet than the Coliseum. You got a chance to get to a new, tap into a larger fan base, a different fan base, and a high energy owner. So again, with relation to your first question as well, there's nothing but upside here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you sort of think about what the Islanders have been since the end of that dynasty in the early 80s, it's almost been a 30-year black hole here. Mm. That this can only go up.
Eric Fisher joins us on Primetime Sports. The sale price, which I haven't seen anywhere publicly yet, I know that the original Andrew Barroway price was apparently $420 million. It would seem that as if this would be north of $420 million. Does that seem like a lot for the Islanders?
It does to me. Again, you're sort of betting on the upside of what this team could be and what the league is could be in general. And clearly the league at large is in the midst of a pretty remarkable growth phase. But it does seem a little bit on the aggressive side. But, franchises of all these major leagues are going up in fairly short order. And that's if you sort of compare this to what would have happened with the Nationals back in 05, 06, it's almost the same number. So not that he's had that money sitting there for 9 years, but you get my point that, compared to what this could have been in some other leagues, if you sort of look at it that way, not terrible. But in a vacuum, it seems a little aggressive.
Eric, there are people who are going to say that the sale price for the Clippers, which for a variety of reasons a lot of us think was inflated, that is going to have a trickle-down effect into other sports franchises. Does it work that way necessarily, or is each league and sort of each collection of franchises of value unto themselves?
Well, I think the sort of the two streams are each league and then each market. Mm. A basketball team in Memphis doesn't necessarily affect directly a baseball team in Seattle, if you sort of get my
yep.
point. But there's sort of a trickle down within each sport and certainly a trickle down within each individual media market. The Clippers certainly elevated what's going to happen in Los Angeles and certainly are going to elevate what happens in basketball. But each of their own sports have their own economics and their own factors at play.
Eric, thanks so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to talk to you always.
Always. Have a good evening.
Take care. That is Eric Fischel of Eric Fisher, Sports Business Journal. This is a terrific job covering the business end of sports. And it sounds as if this is a pretty interesting owner mm-hmm. coming in with the NHL. It doesn't sound as if this guy's necessarily sort of just a suit that's going to blend into the background.
That's probably a good thing. Do you have to give credit to Charles Wong for sticking it out and keeping that team in New York on Long Island?
Well, let's see what the sale price is. Let's see what the sale price is first. I think
there's a loyal bunch of Quebec Nordiques fans who would go down to Nassau Coliseum every year.
Yeah, I know.
Bring me that team.
I know. I'll tell you what. If the Islanders go on and be a successful franchise at the Barclays Center, then yeah. I'm one of these people who think that is going to be a tremendous marriage.
I agree.
The NHL and Barclays. So first of all, the arena is just spectacular. But I just think that it's a good place for a niche. Team.
And I think
to play.
I think it's cool.
Brooklyn is cool.
Yeah. You'd say, why would anybody buy the Islanders? Well, smart people buy low, and it's not necessarily a low price, but when you're moving into the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, that's
exactly
pretty good.
You're buying the Islanders, but you're also effectively you're buying a hockey team in Brooklyn, which
that's what you're buying.
If you're somebody who's a little bit creative, it's a cool idea. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks.
You'll be back tomorrow. Try to show up in time tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to be early tomorrow. Swear.
Try to get off the golf course by by noon.
Get off. Well, yeah, that's the plan.
The man who blew up Twitter. Elliot Friedman will join us at 5 o'clock. Primetime Sports continues on the Fan Radio and Television Network.